Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Frontier Beyond Fear radio program. I'm Susan Larison-Danz, broadcasting from the Portland, Oregon area in what is a very spontaneous, spur-of-the-moment show that I felt strongly called to bring to the airwaves today. After quite a bit of discussion over the last day, regarding what really is quite an astonishing development, the latest study to come out helping us as empowered women with choices, conscious choices, to very mindfully consider our healthcare choices with respect to mammography. Now, this show today is going to touch upon an evolving, controversial area, and I think it's important to acknowledge that right from the start. Facts and responses are still coming out to this latest study. And even though there have been other studies that bring into question the benefits of mammography, there are certainly those who strongly defend it. And so I'm going to make that very clear right at the outset that this show today is more about the personal choices of women and also whether they should be coerced and judged for making certain choices with respect to screening tests. Because the answers are not clear-cut. No matter how much there may be a discussion of different approaches to this topic, there is an abundance of evidence that it is an evolving area. And even more importantly, there are experts who very readily acknowledge that screening is not without risk. And that's why this is such, for many women, really an anguished choice of balancing what you feel is right for you. And so that's why I'm coming on the air today, because normally this is a show about living our lives as much as we can, such that we are not driven by fear into making certain choices, and certainly such that we are not disempowered by others who would choose to take our choices away. And this is a show about exploring the possibilities with an open mind. I am going to be welcoming callers on the show today. Now, since I just scheduled this show at the very last minute, I wasn't able to promote it hardly at all. And so if we don't get any callers, that's fine. What I intend to do here is share some of my own personal reflections, but also what is in the news. I have numerous news reports here regarding this latest study. And if you would like to call in to today's show, that number is 310-807-5104, and multiple perspectives on this topic are welcome. This show is not intended to give medical advice. This show is an opportunity to personally reflect as individual women on the choices that we face every day. And that is the intent of this program. I'm going to start the show by reading from a blog that I wrote yesterday that is very much an editorial. And to be honest, in some ways, even what I wrote there has evolved. And I will reflect upon that as appropriate. And I want to make it clear, these are my personal opinions as someone who has quite honestly reflected upon this topic, and reflecting is probably not a strong enough word. This has been a very challenging topic for me personally for many years. And I know that it's one that has been challenging to other women. I know that many of us know women who have been diagnosed with breast cancer at various stages. I personally am close to women like that who have had a variety of experiences. I'm sure that we all have had our own experiences with breast cancer screening, and many of us have had close calls. I am one such woman who has had a close call that turned out not to be anything to worry about. But anyone who has experienced that knows that it is a stressful situation that calls you to evaluate many alternatives. So, once again, the call-in number today is 310-807-5104. There is also a chat room open today where you are welcome to share your comments, your questions, and I will actually respond on the air. And this show may actually go much shorter than its scheduled time. I gave it a lot of time just in case there was a spontaneous discussion. So, without further delay, I'm going to go ahead and read my blog on this topic from yesterday, which I think will help to frame the discussion and introduce what it is that we're talking about. The title of my blog, which is an editorial, Awakening to the Consequences of Breast Cancer Overscreening and Overdiagnosis, Prominent Study. How many of you know three women who have been diagnosed at some point with breast cancer? Perhaps one of these women is you. Do you know anyone diagnosed with early stage breast cancer who suffered or even died from complications resulting from treatment? What if almost one out of the three women you know may have been the subject of inappropriately aggressive screening, never requiring any diagnosis or treatment at all? More troubling yet, what if the screening itself did little to prevent the number of women overall dying from breast cancer? It's Thanksgiving, and although I really didn't expect to be blogging about breast cancer tonight, I couldn't help but be thankful for a stunning article on breast cancer featured on the front page of my local newspaper, revealing concrete facts about a tragic situation many awakening women like me have suspected for quite some time. As stated in the Oregonian today, quote, in the last 30 years, more than 1 million women have been diagnosed with breast cancer when they didn't have it or had a low-level, non-threatening form, according to a new study from a end quote. From a respected oncologist and medical school professor. And actually, I've since learned that multiple people are involved in this study. Two in particular are quoted in other articles. Back to the blog. The comprehensive long-term study of U.S. women also concludes that early screening by mammograms has had only, quote, marginal impacts on women dying from breast cancer, precisely what widespread early screenings are actually supposed to prevent. Here is a direct quote from the study conclusions in the New England Journal of Medicine itself. Quote, despite substantial increases in the number of cases of early-stage breast cancer detected, screening mammography has only marginally reduced the rate at which women present with advanced cancer. Although it is not certain which women have been affected, the imbalance suggests that there is substantial overdiagnosis, accounting for nearly a third of all newly diagnosed breast cancers, and that screening is having at best only a small effect on the rate of death from breast cancer. End quote. That was from the New England Journal of Medicine. Back to my blog. An earlier 2009 study in the British Journal of Medicine, which, by the way, I will discuss a little bit later, had similar conclusions about overly aggressive screening and diagnosis. Its confirmation, in my opinion, a beautiful demonstration of the scientific method at work. Also in 2009, what one of the panelists later said was, quote, aimed at reducing the potential harm from over-screening, end quote. The independent U.S. Preventive Services Task Force panel appointed by the Department of Health and Human Services questioned the widespread use of mammograms before the age of 50. Yet still, many refuse to listen, refuse to even reflect upon the possibility that women are being overscreened. Again, this is my editorial opinion. And it is absolutely astonishing how few mainstream news organizations are choosing to highlight this latest study. Now, I will intercede here that I have since discovered more mainstream news organizations covering the study, and we will talk about that in a moment. A study that significantly impacts the choices and lives of women worldwide. Women continue to be confused by conflicting recommendations from enthusiastic cancer charities supporting mammography, as well as doctors from the American Medical Association. And then I'm going to skip around a little bit so that I don't read too much from this blog. You can read the link right there. And I think now I'm just going to speak a little bit to this, is that the real question this brings to light is we all know people who have been through a lot as breast cancer survivors. And I am not trying to diminish what these women have gone through. However, what I am trying to talk about here today, which I think is extremely important as an individual woman who has observed this, is that these women are being exposed to incredible risks, which apparently don't necessarily have the benefits that have been advertised. And we all know as women that if you question going for a mammogram, you are belittled, you are judged, you are often coerced, you will have peers who will say that you are ignorant. There are probably people listening to this show who are getting angry right now and would like to do that themselves. And yet the fact of the matter is, most women who have evaluated whether to get screened for something actually understand the meaning of informed consent. Let me talk a little bit about informed consent. Informed consent means that you enter into a relationship, or in this case, a medical procedure, with full information, and you are granted complete freedom to make a choice. So often today, we hear a type of, I would have to call it guilting, very strong guilting, that suggests, well, if you don't go for this particular screening test, you are going to cost society a tremendous amount of money when you get diagnosed later down the line. And I would ask, what about all these women who've been overdiagnosed? How much has that cost society? And why isn't the industry more assertively doing something to protect these women? I have been reading a multitude of stories on this topic today, and although some of them do talk about this notion of protecting women who are being overscreened and overdiagnosed, it's not being talked about enough, because those who have been through a diagnosis of early stage breast cancer, going through very invasive tests and treatments, and this isn't even having anything to do with false positives, which is another matter altogether, have exposed themselves to very real risks. On the other side of informed consent is knowing that, yes, there is a risk that if you don't get screened, something will not be identified that could have been identified early. And there is a huge debate over this concept of, should you get a mammogram just in case? I have a friend, I have multiple friends who have had various experiences. I have one who died of pancreatic cancer, totally different kind of cancer. It was very shocking. It came on very suddenly. Those who get pancreatic cancer die very rapidly, usually. It's a very harsh diagnosis. And yet, why haven't we all gone for full body scans to identify pancreatic cancer? Why aren't we going to identify brain cancer or other forms of cancer, stomach cancer, you name them? Why not everyone go all the time, every year, for a full body scan to have everything in your body checked out? The reason we don't do this is because of the risks. And I actually did surface an article in the blog that I wrote regarding that. The body scans that became popular for a short time very quickly crashed and burned, because what happened to the people who went for them is there were so many anomalies that were found that proved not to be something to worry about, and yet subjected people to invasive surgeries, because once a doctor finds something, they have to follow up on it. There's no questioning. I mean, you have a choice as a patient, but they will certainly pressure you, and fear itself will drive you to follow up on it. And so ultimately, people stopped this brief experiment with body scans. Very few people go and get them anymore, because the risks were astronomically higher than the benefits. The jury is out on mammography, but we are seeing more and more studies come in and recommendations come in that suggest, as women, we should at the very least be mindful of the decisions that we're making in this regard. No matter how emphatic what I know that some will criticize me for calling the cheerleaders for mammography come after you and try to tell you that you have to do this, they are not necessarily fully informed. Many people have a one-sided view of this, and they have information that is many years old, and they are doing a disservice to women by not presenting all the sides, by not acknowledging this is a challenging decision. This is not an easy decision. This is not a, quote, no-brainer. This is not something that's just a checkbox that you just do. This is something that every single woman needs to decide for herself. And that's what empowered women do. That's what empowered patients do. And one of the themes of my show, it seems, is getting more into that, is what does it mean to be an empowered individual within a society where you're often pressured to do certain things that don't feel right to you, and where you're often pressured to do things where you yourself can surface the pros and the cons, but your own research, which is backed up, we're not talking fringe sources even, we're talking mainstream sources, will be questioned by those who would criticize you. And yet, ultimately, it's your choice. Okay, I'm going to I'm going to double check the chat here since it's been pretty quiet. If there's anybody listening who'd like to call in, I am going to present a few news reports here, but the call-in number is 310-807-5104. And I'm just going to do a quick check to see what's going on in the chat. Oh, it's pretty quiet, so this may be kind of a short show since I didn't really get to promote it. It'll end up being more of a podcast. And so with that in mind, please feel free to respond in the comments to this show, as I know many of you will want to do. Feel free to comment on my blog, comment on the show. Feel free, please do share your point of view on this, because that's what this is about. This is about women sharing how they feel. This is about women sharing what they know, what they have researched themselves. And that's the purpose of this show. Okay. I'm going to now see if I can surface a couple things to talk about here from various reports, as well as things that have questioned the latest studies. Okay. Here's something from USA Today. This is from November 21st. Their article, actually November 22nd, it was updated. It starts with a little quote at the top that says, quote, "The study lays bare perhaps the greatest risk of cancer screening, overdiagnosis." And the title of this article is "Study: Many Getting Unnecessary Breast Cancer Treatment." The subtitle, "Screening Doubles Rate of Breast Cancer Diagnosis." Up to 70,000 American women a year are treated unnecessarily for breast cancer because they were screened with mammograms, according to an analysis in today's New England Journal of Medicine that's likely to reignite a running debate over the value of cancer screening. The study, whose results are already being challenged by other cancer experts, finds that nearly 1 in 3 breast cancer patients, or 1.3 million women over the past 3 decades, have been treated for tumors that, although detectable with mammograms, would never have actually threatened their lives. Okay, that's as much as I'm going to read from the heading of this story, so as not to read too much from any one source. But I did want to read from this particular story a quote from one of the people who participated in the study. His name, he's one of the study's co-authors, H. Gilbert Welch of the Dartmouth Institute for Health Policy and Clinical Practice in Lebanon, New Hampshire. He's one of the co-authors of the study. Here's a quote from Welch, again, from USA Today. Quote, "We've suggested to women that having a mammogram is one of the most important things you can do for your health, and that's simply not true." Unquote. Welch says, quote, "I can't tell you the right thing to do, except to tell women the truth. Tell them both sides of the story. We shouldn't be scaring women. This is a really close call." Now, just to provide balance, this particular story provides some input from Len Lichtenfeld, who I believe he is from, let me see, make sure I have this right. I think he's from the American Cancer Society. Yes, from the American Cancer Society. He gives an alternative view, saying that we should treat the study with caution. And he says that the benefits of screening mammography outweigh the risks and harms, which are an unavoidable part of breast cancer screening. So there are going to be alternative points of view here. But I think the important thing is, as women, we need to be deciding now what choices that we're making on the best information that we have available. And there is a growing number of reports that at the very least indicate that there is indeed risk from screening. And I think that that's probably the most important thing coming out about this, that I don't think most women realize that a screening test carries a risk. It's true of any medical screening test. They all carry risks because you could always get a false positive, which isn't even discussed in this study, or a diagnosis that doesn't need to be followed up upon. Okay, I think I'll go to yet another one. Here's one from the Washington Post, which again emphasizes that the American Cancer Society warned that the study, quote, must be viewed with caution. And to be fair, I will say this. The American College of Radiology attacked the validity of the study, charging that it was spreading, quote, misinformation and, quote, the cost may be lost lives. Now, one of the questions I have, and I haven't really seen this in the reports, and I would like to see it, is we all know that cancer treatment can have really dire effects, even deadly effects, if they go the wrong way. And I'd like to know statistically how many women that didn't need to be treated, or just how many women overall with early stage diagnoses have severe consequences, including death from the treatment, because that would be a very important factor in making a decision. Many of us know people personally. If you've read my blog, or if you do, you'll know that I have a personal experience with somebody who long ago, this was some time ago, made an optional choice to go for more aggressive treatment of a very simple cancer, where in those days, I don't know what they do today, but you could choose between chemo. It was optional, and it wasn't really being forced upon this person, but she felt it was the safest route to go. And I remember that discussion specifically, that it just seemed to be the safest thing to do, to be, you know, as comprehensive as possible to take care of this early stage cancer. Well, then I well remember this person ending up in the emergency room. And it was a very life-threatening situation, although the person actually survived. It had to do with white blood cells, I believe. So the thing is we don't know what these choices are going to lead to, but what we do know is that there are risks on either side, and that as women, we have choices. The Washington Post story also quotes Welch, the author of the study. They say that, actually they're just summarizing some of what he says. The author's premise was that if screening were effective, its growing use would result in greater detection of early-stage breast cancers and a corresponding drop in the prevalence of late-stage cancers. And then also, from Welch, one of the authors of the study again, quote, "We need to start telling the truth," said Welch, quote, "We've promoted this as if it's the most important thing a woman can do for her health. And the truth is that it's really a close call." The Washington Post goes on to say, "Women in their 40s who feel comfortable getting annual mammograms," and again, this is from Welch summarizing what he said, "should not be dissuaded from doing so," he said. Quote, "But women who have never felt good about it, who felt coerced into the procedure, should feel equally good about not having it," unquote. Quote, "We should tell women about the trade-offs, and we should allow them to make their own decision," unquote, he said. Now, I would say, again, just as one individual woman, that's always true. we should always expect that from our medical providers. I think all of us have personally seen situations where doctors essentially bully patients. Some doctors are not like this, but some are. And they place patients in a very disempowered role. If, as a patient, you question how you want to proceed with screening or treatment, it is your empowered choice. And we need to really get away from what's going on in society right now regarding guilting people into choices on evidence that is ambiguous at best, where we don't have all the answers, where we don't know what's better for society overall or what's going to cost society less overall. Mammography costs society a tremendous amount. One of the questions that I had as I was looking at this was the use of digital mammography today, because that's not even really discussed in this study, which, as far as I know anyway, which I believe started in 1976. I'm trying to see somewhere I have the years of the study. But what we do know is that digital mammography has only been around since around 2000. And one question I had as I was reading this is, if digital mammography is more sensitive, which is something that I personally evaluated when it first came out, I was concerned, based on some things I read at the time, that, and also have read even today, that they are more effective at detecting certain types of things because they're more sensitive. And so a question that I have that I would like to see addressed is whether the increase in overdiagnosis has actually accelerated since the introduction of digital mammography. And, you know, as much as we'd like to say that the profit motive is not a part of the medical community and that money has nothing to do with it or even just the costs, if you want to talk about costs to society, we really have a responsibility to thoroughly analyze the technology that is being put in place and whether it truly has the benefits that are advertised. That's where our healthcare dollars are often going. So that's yet another area that I wanted to highlight. Okay. Now I'm looking, and again, if you're listening out there and you want to call in and present an alternative point of view, the guest call-in number, or the caller number, is 310-807-5104. Okay. Here's a report. This one is from CBS News. It again says, the study suggests that up to one-third of breast cancers, or 50,000 to 70,000 cases a year, don't need treatment. Now, one thing that this particular report from CBS News covers is what happens to you if you're diagnosed with early-stage breast cancer. Well, Dr. H. Gilbert Welch of Dartmouth Medical School talks about that. Quote, and although no one can say with certainty which women have cancers that are overdiagnosed, there is certainty about what happens to them. They undergo surgery, radiation therapy, hormonal therapy for 5 years or more, chemotherapy, or, usually, a combination of these treatments for abnormalities that otherwise would not have caused illness. And again, if there's a reason that I have spontaneously scheduled this show today, it's because of that. It's because screening has a cost. And there are other voices of women out there, the voices that you may not have heard very often. I know that there are women who enthusiastically advocate screening, but they need to be presenting the facts that screening has risks, and it has potential benefits. In fact, the best thing that could ever be done is to hand women all the studies that have been done. And there have been others. It's too bad that someone can't put together a summary, but of course there's controversy out there. And thus is the ambiguity. You do not have a clear-cut choice. You have an ambiguous choice. And as a woman, you cannot be bullied or cheerleaded or cheerled into a choice. Just because women have been told for years that they have to tell a friend to do this, and I mean, there have been so many campaigns over the years, and how many overdiagnoses has that led to? How will these women ever know? Women who went through a lot, if they could go back in time before that diagnosis, if they could make that choice again, if they could even know that they had a choice, of course, once they knew and were scared to death, they treated it. Even the study's authors say that you should do that. But once again, do you go for screening of your brain? What if you have a cancer? Do you go for screening of your pancreas, your stomach, other parts of your body? What if? There was one article where someone who said that women should not be influenced by these studies basically compared, and I don't know if I have the quote, but they compared going for mammography to buying insurance, like catastrophic insurance, not even health insurance, but like for your car or something. You know, what if you have an accident? You need to go for the screening. And I immediately saw that there was a flaw to that argument, because the thing is that insurance carries no risk except to your pocketbook. Insurance does not carry a risk, whereas screening does. And every woman has the right to know the risks. This applies to all forms of screening. And although this is really controversial, there are other forms of screening that women get that some have raised questions about that too. And I was pretty shocked to see that when I looked online. And it's something I'm going to be looking at more closely. Things that we've held sacred, thinking that if we didn't do it, there would be immediate consequences. The thing is that with every choice, there are pluses and minuses. And we owe it to ourselves as empowered women, as women who truly care about ourselves and each other, even if you strongly feel that for yourself, you're going to go for every screening test that anyone ever tells you to go for, get every flu shot, get every possible new treatment without even evaluating the risks at all. That's up to you. However, please, women, stop bullying other women. Because quite honestly, you're going to start hearing how we feel about it. It's not as simple as many women have been taught. And those who have done research into alternatives don't particularly appreciate being considered ignorant for actually doing more homework than many of the women who are simply repeating a mantra that they've been taught for years. Just because the local TV station has some cute campaign to convince your friends to go do something doesn't mean that those friends haven't made their own empowered choices. And we have a right to those choices. And that's what the study author, Welch, one of the study authors, is saying. And I think that is the most incredible thing of all to come out of this, that we hear honesty from the medical establishment, where we hear the honesty of ambiguity, that you have a choice and that the choices aren't always clear and that you need to follow your heart. You need to do what you know is right for you. And I think nothing could be more important than that. Once again, for this spontaneous show, which will soon end if we don't have listener participation, which is understandable. When I speak like this, I can't really put out timely messages on Twitter or anything, so it's a pretty spontaneous show, but I know you're out there in the podcast because I know the listenership that we have for this show. So if you are listening later and you want to respond, please do, and I'll respond to you in the comments, as long as they are worded in such a way that it's appropriate for general audiences. I will be happy to respond to any comment on the show page, as well as to my blog. My blog actually goes into things that go far beyond this particular study, discussing exploring alternative treatment options. And I'll tell you one thing, that the more I read from Welch, I'll tell you a place where I've evolved, just in the last day. In fact, I think I'll probably add this to my blog soon. I trust someone like Welch. He is a balanced individual who is presenting facts in a balanced way instead of steamrolling women. And I appreciate that. And one of the things that his study seems to reveal is that treatments have gotten more successful, and that it's not the screenings that have reduced deaths from advanced cancers. It's actually the more advanced treatments. And as I read that, I felt that I need to be more mindful of that too, because in my blog, I talk about people who, through the years, have encountered some pretty harsh treatment situations. And I think it's important for women to understand that treatments do evolve, and to have an open mind. And reading some of what he said actually opened my mind a little bit more to the fact that medical science does evolve over time. So some of the horror stories that we personally know about may not be as relevant today as they once were. So there's a place where I've evolved just in studying this. Now, I will also say that I have heard some very positive accounts of alternative things that have worked for people. One of the things I didn't say in my blog is some years ago when I had a frightening mammogram and had to go for follow-ups. And by the way, another area that I've questioned, although they say the screening mammograms don't carry a radiation risk, what about the diagnostic follow-ups? Because women who are at higher risk or who have a lot of follow-ups because they have dense tissue or for whatever reason, they can be subjected to quite a few of these in one setting. That was my experience. And I certainly would wonder, what is the radiation risk if this is happening to you frequently? Like every 6 months, you're not just going for one, you're going for several. And I think that's an informed question that women should ask, that I would certainly ask. But the thing is, I went through my own scare. It turned out not to be what they thought it was. It even puzzled them at the time, and I don't quite understand what all occurred. This was some years ago. It certainly subjected me to a great deal of stress. But because of what I had been told about the characteristics of the mammogram at the time, that it contained a particular aspect that when I researched later is quite frightening, quite honestly, I was fully prepared, doing my homework, knowing of firsthand accounts of people close to me, I was fully prepared to investigate and have a completely open mind about alternative treatments, also knowing that people die from alternative treatments and people die from conventional treatments, both. But I will say, Welch and his study, to be fair, does show that there has been progress in treatments in the conventional world. And that's something that's worth noting, especially from someone who I feel is of balance that I clearly respect. Now, let's see if I can find. I'm just going to, I don't know how much longer I'm going to go with this since it's quiet. Again, the call-in number is 310-807-5104. from the Oregonian study, or the Oregonian article. Okay, just see here. I've got so many different things here. Just trying to... I think the reason this was surfaced locally is one of the authors is actually a local oncologist from Bend. And there was another article, and I don't have it right in front of me, where apparently he had warned his daughter-in-law about going too frequently for screening mammograms, and she chose to go more frequently than he recommended. But he clearly has concerns about the safety of women, as do everyone involved with this situation. And I was hoping to find his name within this article, but I'm having trouble finding it in the printout. But there is a link to it in the blog. Oh, here it is. Archie Blyer is his name. This is from the Oregonian. He said, and he's from OHSU, which is a local school in Oregon. A research professor he is. He says, quote, from the Oregonian, this part's not a quote. The Oregonian says the overdiagnosis rate is, quote, larger and more problematic than I had hoped, unquote, and calls for better screening methods, said study co-author Archie Blyer. Quote, even if this is partially true, we can't just let it go. Either it should be refuted or we have to rethink some of what we are doing, unquote. So there's someone who has an open approach to the scientific method. He's openly inviting people to refute the study. Now, one of the things that is referred to in the study is this isn't the first one. And I think I would be remiss in ending this program, which I will do soon, without mentioning that, some of the earlier things. I have, for example, a study that was in the British Medical Journal and a story from CBS News from July 2009 says the study, many with breast cancer overtreated. And it talks about these professors in Copenhagen, and this was a European study, again, in the British Medical Journal. And I don't have the exact results here. It looks like it didn't fully print out, but there is a link to this from the blog, if you're curious about the 2009 study. And a quote from it is, here's from one of the study's authors. Quote, the information needs to get to women so they can make an informed choice, unquote, Jorgensen said. Quote, there is a significant harm in making women cancer patients without good reason, unquote. Again, just quoting from the story, just a couple sentences. Jorgensen said that for years, women were urged to undergo breast cancer screening without them being informed of the risks involved, such as having to endure unnecessary treatment if a cancer was identified, even if it might never threaten their health. So this is yet another study from 2009 that I urge you to look at as you're doing your homework. I also surfaced another story from CNN. This is from October 2011. And it talked about there being more false alarms and uncertain benefits seen with annual mammograms. And it said, over 10 years of screening, the study estimates 61% of women who have annual mammograms and 42% of women who have biennial mammograms will be called back at least once for a follow-up test that reveals they do not, in fact, have cancer. The probability of having an unnecessary biopsy is similarly higher with annual screening. Depending on the age at which they begin screening, 7 to 9% of women who have annual mammograms and 5 to 6% of those who have biennial mammograms will have unnecessary biopsies over a 10-year period, according to the study. So this is yet another one that, again, emphasizes the point of why I'm on the air here today. Women have choices, and they are not stupid choices. They are not ignorant choices. It's actually more ignorant to deny that there are pros and cons in this situation, to suggest that such a decision to be screened and how often should be taken lightly, and that you shouldn't bother to evaluate it, and that you should just do what they tell you to do on television, although today on television they're probably telling you some things you didn't expect, because more and more media organizations are reporting on these studies. There's another thing from the New York Times. This was from 2009. Many people remember this, how the United States Preventive Services Task Force, they urged mammograms at 50, not 40. And I also surfaced another story recently from June 2012 where the American Medical Association strongly questioned that and said they have concerns about that, and that their reactions have included, and this particular story is from MSNBC, has included, quote, outrage, disappointment, frustration, and sadness, unquote. They say, quote, they put undue emphasis on possible risks without adequately emphasizing the obvious benefits of early screening, unquote. So it really is a situation where there are many things to evaluate here. And as empowered women, the best thing you can do is simply your homework. So with that said, since we're nearing an hour and I've been talking for a little while about this topic, I welcome anyone coming in to listen to the podcast, which is really just a summary of some of what I've studied in just the last couple days mostly, but is also a reflection of something that has impacted me very personally. And I guess as I close out the show, I will say that just based on my own evaluation of what I knew even several years ago and how I felt about personally my own choices and my own empowerment over those choices, I did join what I have since learned was a growing number of women choosing alternatives to mammography. I did not feel that it was a safe approach for me. That was my personal choice. I felt that if I needed to go for something, I would go for thermography instead, which is another topic entirely, which is not covered by any of these articles, which I urge women to research. And no, I have nothing to do with the thermography industry, but that was my personal choice, was that if I felt that I had something that needed to be checked out, ultrasound, thermography, there are other alternatives that I felt would be safer, and I really did feel that over-screening was taking place. And quite honestly, these studies coming out now are really confirming what many women have wondered about. I would say my decision coincided with digital mammography coming on the scene, because I was unwilling to submit to what I really felt I was observing just among the people around me, people getting diagnosed way more often. You don't need a study as a woman today to know that women are getting diagnosed incredibly often with this disease, often with early stages. You know, how many of us know someone who just had a spot or, you know, a tissue abnormality, and they had to go for aggressive treatment of some sort? You know, once there's that just-in-case factor, once they found something, what are you going to do? Most women will go for the treatment, which then carries further risks. And how many of us know people who suffered from that? And as many enthusiastic coaches that are out there who, you know, try to coach women through the treatment, often, and this is another thing that I feel is not right, the brave choice that you make when you confront a diagnosis is not necessarily treatment. And too many women try to say that. Too many people who have survived the treatment want to say that the brave choice is to do what you're told. Not necessarily. The brave choice is to be empowered. The brave choice is to do your own homework. The brave choice is, in some cases, to find another doctor. The brave choice is to simply say no when you feel that it's appropriate. Sometimes the brave choice is to say yes. And as I said earlier, some of what this Dr. Welch has said has made me more open-minded about the choices that I might entertain under those circumstances, how being open-minded is so very key. But we need to stop belittling women who make their own choices, whether you are a survivor or a doctor or a coach, no matter who you are, we need to recognize with respect that every woman has a right to the choices over her own body. And those choices extend far beyond traditional choices we often hear about. Those choices involve every aspect of her medical care. And the more that we recognize that, and the wonderful quotes from Dr. Welch that affirm that, the more that we really will have a system where women can work in true partnership with their coaches, with their healthcare providers, where the healthcare providers are open-minded and intelligent enough, expansive enough, to provide all kinds of options for treatment, complementary care, multiple ways to address a situation, no matter what it might be. Okay, well, cool. I have a call, so I guess I'll stay on the line. So if you're at area code 503, and I have a feeling I know who this is, I'm about to bring you on the air. Hello, you're on the Frontier Beyond Fear.
Hi, Susan. This is Edie.
I knew it was you, Edie. I saw you in the chat.
How are you?
Yes, thank you for coming. In fact, here is a wellness coach, just in time when I was talking about coaches. So thank you for coming on with me. I scheduled the show such at the last minute. I've mostly been monologuing. In fact, that's what I've been doing. I've just been talking. So I welcome you on the show today.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I was just tuning in at the last part of it, but of course, you and I have been having a dialogue about this for the last day, and I just thank you so much for posting the blog that you wrote on this. It's incredible. First of all, I highly recommend that anyone check it out. Your blog is just, it's phenomenal, and so well written and so concise, and there's just, and it's such an important topic. I think it almost could almost be the most important topic right now, you know, like it's just, it's like a white hot point. And what you were saying about it being about empowerment, that is, you know, from a wellness coaching point of view, or just from someone who kind of lives and breathes health is about, it's so personal.
Mm-hmm.
And it is anything that any decision that we make is a deeply personal decision. And that's what I love, what you were just saying is We can't, you know, science is great because science will show us patterns, but when it comes down to individual, the way that people individually heal, you know, we can't go by statistics necessarily or alone. We have to go by that gut feeling of what you were just saying. So thank you so much for bringing this to.
Well, thank you, Edie.
Just talking
and,
about it.
You know, I've often wondered, in fact, you kind of bring something up that I've pondered, is that if we're ambivalent about a particular approach, if in our gut it just mm-hmm. doesn't feel right and we know it doesn't mm-hmm. feel right, how much does that affect the success? I mean, we all know the mind-body connection.
Yeah.
And so if we're feeling very doubtful and ambivalent and just like this just isn't right, this isn't right, and then maybe there are tons of side effects and you're just knowing that it's just something not right, and maybe you have facts like we've been surfacing on this show that even call more into question, how might that affect your overall outcome?
I think it absolutely does. They now know that our thoughts thoughts and emotions influence our genetic expression. So it absolutely does influence it. And it's not to say that you don't make that choice maybe to get that mammogram or just, you know, to get those. It's again, it's so personal, but yeah, it's if you have deep fear around something or you're not sure, and you're subjecting your body to something that maybe it doesn't need, absolutely, I think it can, I mean, I think you can still recover from it, though. Like, our bodies are so resilient, you know, but yeah, but definitely.
You know, now that I have you on the air, and for people who are joining us kind of late, because I know we've got listeners out there who are quiet, but I thought you would so appreciate something I wasn't able to put in the blog, but just a quote I surfaced in maybe the last hour from one of the doctors who did this study. And I just think it bears repeating. And his name is Dr. Welch, and he's from Dartmouth. Quote, "We need to start telling the truth," unquote, said Welch. Mm. Quote, "We've promoted this as if it's the most important thing a woman can do for her health. And the truth is that it's a really close call," unquote.
Mm-hmm.
And then the story goes on to say in the Washington Post, the Washington Post, women, this is also from him, although not a quote, they're paraphrasing, "Women in their 40s who feel comfortable getting annual mammograms should not be dissuaded from doing so," he said. Quote, "But women who have never felt good about it, who felt coerced into the procedure, should feel equally good about not having it," unquote. Mm. And then he also goes on to say, quote, "We should tell women about the trade-offs, and we should allow them to make their own decision," unquote. And I'll tell you, Edie, I would go to a doctor like that in a heartbeat.
Those are fantastic quotes. Absolutely, and kind of one of the other articles that you sent me was that one of the doctors was saying we need to be honest about not just the pros but the cons, and both sides. And this is about disclosure, and it's not. This is not. Yeah, and it's not to disempower anyone, and especially if a woman has been tested and she knows she maybe has those breast cancer genes, she may not fall into this category at all. You know, she may be. I mean, I think Christina Applegate is a perfect example. I think she did have those genes, and then I don't know her full story, but she was very young. She was in her 30s, and she and people even in their 20s sometimes, mammograms can detect something that maybe is not just a benign tumor, or that's something that's just minor, but something that's going to metastasize really quickly. But I think for the majority of women, and I think I would fall into this category. I had one mammogram when I turned 40 because I thought, oh, this is what we're supposed to do.
And
my body did not like it at all. And I'm not saying this to discourage other women from doing it, but I agree with you. I would choose ultrasound or thermography or something.
Yeah. I don't know if I have it right here in front of me, but one of the things the study also said, which is interesting, is that and I don't have the exact quote, so I'm paraphrasing, but basically some of the more aggressive tumors often aren't found in mammography anyway, that Maybe they come up so fast. You know, that was one of the things that they were talking about. Not to say that they couldn't find them. I mean, I don't think they were dismissing that, but just that, you know, I think that, overall what this really says is the medical establishment is called to find better techniques that you know, we haven't, that maybe mammography is not the end-all be-all of of this. And maybe there are better and safer screening techniques that should be researched. And so I think that kind of comes out of this too. And I think what I feel so much is that everyone surrounding these studies, no matter what their point of view, I mean, they do care about women. I mean, many of them
do.
I mean, I'm sure there's some who have a profit motive or whatever. I mean, there's always going to be some people in an industry who are not, maybe don't have the best interests at heart. But most of the people commenting on this and from the cancer charities and different things, they care about women. I mean, and I think they're genuinely worried that women will be confused and misled. And I guess part of the problem is it is confusing. I mean, it's not clear-cut, and that's the message, is that sometimes we need to make choices in the midst of ambiguity. I mean, I think that's
absolutely,
in fact, not just sometimes, almost all the time.
Maybe all the time.
But I would say probably
that,
it's most of the time, if not all. And often if we're told that something's not ambiguous, something's not quite right about that. I mean, there's usually something worth evaluating with every choice, you know. So anyway,
that's, it's not, nothing's black and white. I love how you say that.
Yeah,
definitely.
And so anyway, I thank you for calling. And
sure.
If you want, feel free.
Thank you for holding it.
I know you have a show on this about health, and if you want to let people know where they can find you, feel free. Or if you just want to be anonymous, you can too. But I open that up to you because you work in assisting lots of women and men, for that matter. But I know you assist a lot of people with wellness and also have your own show. So feel free to let us know.
Thanks, Susan. Well, I appreciate it. I just want to say really quickly what you were talking about. I think it just comes down to responsibility on both ends, you know, the doctors, the researchers, and also us. Everyone needs to take a little more responsibility. But thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, I have my own show called The Wellness Coach, and I do hope that you come on there too, and maybe we can have another discussion about this because it's so important. And so The Wellness Coach on Blog Talk Radio, and you were my first guest on there, so I thank you so much for that.
And
helped me inaugurate it.
It has grown by leaps and bounds. It seems like we're both having a good time with our shows. I mean, I don't know about you, but I know we're both enjoying the guests that are coming our way these days.
And I
celebrate your success, Edie. I mean, I kind of watch from afar. We probably neither of us have time to listen to both shows all the time and stuff, but I just know that, you know, you're bringing on some really cool people onto your show, so, and I'm glad to see it.
Thank you, Susan, and likewise to you as well. And yeah, it's an enjoyable journey. I really enjoy it, and I'm just so glad to know you, and just thank you so much for your important work. So.
Okay, well, thank you. And so I guess with that said, I think I'm going to draw this show to a close, since I think you know, didn't get a lot of listeners coming in to participate, but that's okay. I do want to encourage people, if you want to respond to anything we've said, or if you have more to inject into this discussion where your own research surfaces something interesting, those listening out there, I know both Edie and I and others listening would really like to hear it. I mean, this is what it means to be open-minded to information. I am continually updating my blog post with comments of my own, just adding things that I've been finding on this topic. So if I can leave everyone with that, is just encourage everyone, please keep surfacing information so that, you know, we can all approach this with an open mind and where we can really see the nuances. In fact, I think one of the study's authors said that somewhere, that these choices have nuances, which is an interesting word to use. They are subtle. It's not that simple. There are subtleties to these choices. And, you know, the more information that we have at our disposal, the better choices we can make about every aspect of our health.
Well said.
Yeah, well, thank you. So I guess I will wish you, Edie, and everyone else listening, I hope that if you're listening right now that you enjoy, if you're in the U.S., the rest of your Thanksgiving weekend. I'm actually going to do a doubleheader because I wasn't intending to be on the air today, because I'll be back on tomorrow again alone because I didn't bring in a guest for Thanksgiving weekend, and I'll be talking about something totally different in the spirituality category. I actually put this show in women, that category, and this is actually applicable to women if you have an interest in this. I will be talking about my research into mystical women throughout history, since I am an amateur historian and have been researching that for my book project. And that will be 2 p.m. tomorrow on Saturday, November 24th. And then I also, as long as I've got people on listening, the next show after that is going to be next Friday. And I've got PMH Atwater coming on. She's one of the top near-death experience experts in the world. However, she's also a parenting expert of Children of the New Earth. And she's written multiple books. And it's a real honor to have her coming on this show because she's been on all kinds of things. She's been on Larry King Live. She's been on Regis and Kathy Lee, all kinds of mainstream programs. And she's going to be on here Friday, better look at the date, losing track, Friday the 30th of November at 1 p.m. Pacific. So I'm really looking forward to welcoming her on the show as well.
Wow, those sound like great shows.
Yeah, thanks, Edie. So, and thanks, everyone listening. So I hope all of you have a good night, good day, whatever time of day this finds you at, and that you find those moments of peace that you're speaking because, or that you're seeking, because that's where we make our best choices, is when we can calm our spirits and find that stillness, that place where we can really listen to our hearts. And so that's what I would ask of everyone, is to find that place of peace, no matter what your choices are in this moment. So thank you again, everybody, and thank
Beautiful.
You, Edie, for coming on.
Thanks, Susan.
All
Great
right,
to talk to
take care, everyone.
All right, you too.